Fellow Freedom fans, David Allen Carmichael back here with the Faith and Freedom Show. I'm going to talk about these issues of the day on a constitutional basis, a biblical basis, the basis of right versus wrong. Again, I'm going to read right from the words of John Locke. This is circa 1689 is when it was published. He wrote this when it would have cost him his head to do so, but then with the William of Orange and his wife, the Queen of England, Mary, they took over the throne from James II. And so there was this thing called the English Bill of Rights and everything that kind of came in, and something that our founders of this nation sort of modeled. One of the things that John Locke, during that period, as he was dealing with some of these issues and the balances of power and freedom and things like that, he wrote what is called his two treatises on government. And so the second treatise, in chapter 18, he's talking of tyranny. He says, as usurpation is the exercise of power which another hath a right to. You ever see the Declaration of Independence and they talk about usurpations? That's an exercise of power that is somebody else's to do. And as I said before the break, I would say, just looking at the facts that I can see with regard to the Honduras situation, and as I even give a hoot about Honduras, I don't, okay? Except I got to love him as my neighbor, you know? But as I look at the facts, I see, well, was the president, the executive officer, exercising a power that the Constitution reserved to the legislature? Yeah, it appears he was. It's up to the legislature to do a constitutional referendum. That's the balance. That is the rule of law. That is the law of the land down there. And you would think that the executive would be upholding the Constitution, not out being a renegade. But so that would be a usurpation. Now, let's see the definition as John Locke understood it of tyranny. Tyranny is the exercise of power beyond right. I often say it's exercise of power without authority. Tyranny is the exercise of power beyond right, which nobody can have a right to. Thank you for that moment of pause there. Something to think about, a little emphasis with silence. Tyranny is the exercise of power beyond right, which nobody can have a right to. It's at least the exercise of power without, in his case, the executive officer, Mr. Zelaya, without the authority of law in the Honduran Constitution. I find it interesting, fascinating, and a little bit troubling, as somebody sitting back watching the in-flight entertainment while our plane is in a nosedive, that I see the executive, the President of the United States, and the Secretary of State basically telling all of the legislature and all of the Supreme Court in a constitutional republic of Honduras that they are a de facto government because they exercised a responsibility they had in their own constitution to hold the executive officer accountable for violating their law. I find it personally troubling. I think that's kind of scary. It makes me wonder, I wonder what they consider about their own boundaries. I don't know. I can't read their mind. I can't peer into the depths of their soul and figure out what it is they're doing. I can't connect their DNA dots. I can't do that. But it is troubling when I look at the facts and I think, you know, they know the facts better than I do. And some of those people have been trained in Harvard Law School. You would think that they would go, I mean, was Gerald Ford a de facto president when Richard Nixon found himself doing unlawful things because he was trying to secure and pad his power? He was doing things that were unconstitutional. They were just, you know, flat out wrong. They were just evil. And so there was a threat. Hey, man, we're going to do the following thing to you. You can resign now and we won't have jurisdiction anymore. Or you can stick around and face the music. And he resigned. And, of course, Gerald Ford took over because he was the person who, by the law, the way the function of government, would succeed the president of the United States when he was no longer the person who was in that office was no longer in that office. Was Gerald Ford a de facto president? Why, and this is just the question that pops up in my head as I'm looking at the facts in Honduras, why then would it be currently a de facto government in Honduras? Because the Secretary of State and the President of the United States say it is so, is it? What about those critical thinking? Do we develop our critical thinking by lining up the rights on the right and the wrongs on the left and then balancing it out to see how what we should decide? No, we look at authority. I'm going to go to Federalist Papers 48, and James Madison had some, he was telling people of the day, explaining to them the perspective of this balance of mixed government. James Madison said, in a government where numerous and extensive prerogatives are placed in the hands of a monarch, the executive department is very justly regarded as a source of danger. So where all the power is, that's where they consider things to be dangerous. And Mr. Madison said that should be watched with all the jealousy which a zeal for liberty ought to inspire. I did a little homework and I found out the history of Central America and the governing issues there and the tendency to have factious inspirations that will basically put into office a dictator who is tyrannical. They just had a tendency to do that. What they did is they instituted in their constitution a boundary so that the president, the executive department, the person in charge of that, could not be reelected. And if that rule was supposed to change, it would be only changed by the legislature. Anybody else who tried to pull that off by some factious, popular, emotional movement would be in trouble. They'd be violating the law, that they wanted to keep things under control and do things in an orderly way. If the people were going to come up and change the Constitution, they could do it. But there was a mechanism to do that. Not the executive himself, who was a conflict of interest, trying to change things or inspire a rabble. That's what's going on in Honduras. Let's continue to listen to what Mr. James Madison said in Federalist 48. See, you never get a chance to read this stuff, so I do this on the radio. You just have a cup of coffee, enjoy yourself, a little glass of tea or something like that, and a brownie, we'll have a good time. In a democracy where a multitude of people exercise in person the legislative functions, now that's kind of the tyranny of the majority, and are continually exposed by their incapacity for regular deliberation and concerted measures, they're saying in a democracy, people just get spun up by their passions. They don't sit around in committees with their, depending on their training and background, and discuss these things, you know, very carefully. He says, to the ambitious intrigues of their executive magistrates, tyranny may well be apprehended on some favorable emergency to start up in the same quarter. In other words, when you start getting a rabble going, and that's essentially what we see the situation in Honduras, what Mr. Zelaya was doing, and not whether it's right or wrong. Who cares whether it's right? It might be right, might be wrong, might be both right and wrong. It doesn't matter. By what authority does he have to take the action? That's what we have to look at. Back up to a constitutional basis before you even have a discussion of right or wrong. You can't even go there if you don't have the authority. Why get in the weeds when it's not necessary? So there, be, you know, James Madison said, in those kind of situations where you spin up the people, you know what happens? You end up having just as much tyranny by a passionate group suddenly violating the Constitution and installing somebody into power who's just really taking advantage of the fray. Mr. Madison went on to say in the Federalist 48, but in a representative republic, that's what Honduras and the United States, many other places are, but in a representative republic where the executive magistracy is carefully limited. See, Mr. Madison was advocating a limited executive. Mr. Zelaya was in the office of a limited executive. Huh, de facto government? I wonder who's de facto. And where the legislative power is exercised by an assembly which is inspired by a supposed influence over the people with an intrepid confidence in its own strength. That's the legislature, strong. They get together. They have meetings. They have regular sessions. They go to the Constitution. They look at their boundaries. They, if they follow Blackstone's advice, they go there to avoid and avert every dangerous innovation and to uphold the Constitution. That very well may be where their hearts and minds are. And of course, they're elected democratically and people put them in office that way. He goes on, he says that Mr. Madison says, well, he's hoping this legislature is sufficiently numerous to feel all the passions which actuate a multitude, yet not so numerous as to be incapable of pursuing the objects of his passions. Well, it looks like Honduras had that. I think it had a legislature that was, you know, accessible to the passions of the people, yet still able to take action. It's not so big so that there's stagnant motion of the government. No indication there was stagnant government there. He says, Mr. Madison goes on to say, and I'll try to wrap up this Madison thing, it is against the enterprising ambition of this department that the people ought to indulge all their jealousy and exhaust all their precautions. Now, he's saying that it's against the legislature that people need to be paying attention. The way the government was set up originally, that the executive wasn't just voted in because of our passions. It literally had a lot of scrutiny with regard to those who we elect and put in office for the state legislature. I mean, the state could come up with a method of determining electors, whether or not you had an election that was in the weeds, okay? But one of the things that Madison was talking about in this mixed government, which is essentially what you've got in Honduras. I'm going to make a comment of what Mr. Madison said before we go to the next break. He said, an elective despotism was not the government we fought for. So that's, we in America didn't fight for having the passions of the people sweep in somebody into office who could ignore the Constitution. It's the same in Honduras. We didn't elect a elective despotism, but one which should not only be founded on free principles, but in which the powers of government should be so divided and balanced among the several bodies of magistracy, as that no one could transcend their legal limits. See that? No one, even a person, a man in the executive agency, could transcend their legal limit without being effectually checked and restrained by the others. I have just, as I've gone to the news as much as I can, as does as much research as I can, not being a complete subject matter expert on it, I'm looking at the Honduras thing and going, it looks like that, and there was a whole lot of activity going on beside just, well, he kind of wanted to get a non-official referendum. It appears to me as stirring up a rabble, but he was doing things that literally were contrary to the Constitution, and he was actually admonished by the government powers, the legislature, and other people, the attorney general, and other people, saying, don't do what you're doing. In all of our opinion, you're violating the law. Just stop it. You know, let your next-door neighbor get the rabble going. They can do it legally, but you can't. Stop it. Well, he even partnered with a leader of a foreign nation to get the rabble going. Oh, my goodness. That's sedition and treason. It really is. I think in time of war, he could be put to death. So how are we in America with the foundation that we have and the boundaries that we have and a government that we've instituted that's intended to be a minister of God for our good, where we are accountable to God, and because we're accountable to God, we institute government to protect people's life, liberty, and property so they can pursue happiness, etc. If we have that perspective and there's another nation that has that perspective, why are the people in office right now who have been to law school and should be, you know, understand these things, why are they saying there's a de facto government? I'm going to try to get the State Department on the line with me. And I'm going to try, not today, because I'm going through the proper channels, but to have them explain to me why the U.S. policy in particular, I want to know, constitutionally, biblically, right versus wrong, right? We're going to do that, investigate the issues of the day on those bases. And so we're going to come back here with the Faith and Freedom Show after the top of the hour. We're going to talk about these issues. Don't hesitate to check us out on our website, faithfreedoms.org, and call in at 888-850-1872.